This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate Gee. I've created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk analyze and explain the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many, many more. A new episode comes out every other Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you'd like to call in and leave a voicemail question or comment to be read on the show, the U.S. number is 714-900-2601. Or send it in through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. All right. Good evening, everybody. It's Nate Gee here, along with Dr. Jen Hawk and Dr. Doug Lyle with the Beat Your Genes podcast. Hello, doctors. How are you doing this evening?
Good.
Very well. How's it going with you?
It's going all right. My grandmother, my dear grandmother, Rosa, passed away this weekend. Mm-hmm. But it was really nice to know her because she followed so many principles that Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk have espoused here on the show, where she lived all the way up until she died, had no regrets, and loved life. I will miss her, but life must move on.
Very good. Life well lived.
A life well lived.
Very, very sorry to hear it. Mm-hmm. I know you guys were super, super close. So.
Yeah, and this, she was the embodiment of someone who did not waste her life at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was incredible to see. It's an inspiration to me. So I have deleted all my social media accounts. Just kidding. Thinking of, yeah.
Got it. Okay.
All right. That's good enough. That's all we can ask for, yeah, in the modern social media environment. So you just to have the spirit of a beloved grandmother inspire you to think about it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. It's good.
And we've got. She used to play around on social media as well with some really funny comments that I'll probably post, you know, once in a while on the page here and there. But she, you know, she would have her iPhone watch, you know, and every time she actually had it plugged into her hearing aid, so she could hear text messages and notifications coming in. So once in a while, when we talked to her, you couldn't tell if she just didn't hear you or she was getting a notification and paying attention to that. So it was pretty funny.
Oh my goodness! Just as susceptible to the supernormal pleasure trap of notifications as the rest of us.
All right. Well. Our show today contains some slightly different questions than normal. So we're not talking pleasure trap. We're talking a little bit more COVID and masks and things like that. So let's just take it from the top. Dr.
Sure.
Hawk, Dr. Lyle, let's go.
All right.
Dear doctors, as a somewhat successful woman in her late 30s, I find many men attracted to my stability. I feel almost viewed as an asset to potential mates in the dating arena. Someone they would show off to their parents, even to hear, quote, we could do so much with our incomes combined. Okay. Dr. Lyle has stated men are not much concerned about provisions from the woman. I would like to hear your download on this. Along the same lines, I hire a dozen or so people a year to help in labor-type jobs. Most of the individuals are in their 20s and seem to lack work ethic compared to people in their later 30s. I automatically think that the millennials lack work ethic and it is, quote, learned behavior. How do you explain this from an evolutionary standpoint? My point is this, if laziness isn't learned, why does it seem to me like we have more lazy people today than previous generations?
Well, let's start with the mating thing, Jen. Why don't you start with that?
Yeah,
and let's hear your take on that.
Well, I think the answer to the two-part question, I mean, on its face, it sounds like two very different questions, but
yes.
I think the answer is actually the same, which is that you're looking at an opportunistic CB.
Yeah.
So it's funny. I talk to a lot of clients where I have heard some version of this story so many times that it's actually like become a type that I can kind of anticipate based on certain characteristics of the story. So successful woman in her 30s or 40s who's out there on the dating market. And usually a personality type that's very conscientious, i.e. successful, and usually pretty agreeable, and gets some wastrel who latches on really, really, really quickly. Like usually the first person that they meet on a dating site and they go out with, and then they call me and they're trying to like justify all of the different things that this guy is doing and his mixed signals and all these dynamics in this relationship, which are really just reflecting that you've got this this less successful gentleman who is trolling Match.com looking for a meal ticket, more or less. And there are variations of this story. It's not always quite that cut and dried. If you've got guys saying, you know, what could we do with our incomes combined, that is implying that he's at least employed. That's great. But I think most of the time when you're running into this dynamic where you have a male who is interested in you as a financial asset to the union of the relationship, that is a male who is not very confident about his own ability to provide and protect in an ancestral sense. And he is definitely running a CB on the actual financial interest that you're bringing to the relationship. So I would say that you've got a little bit of personality distortion that is likely leading you into these scenarios where you're, you know, i.e., why do I attract the same kind of guy over and over again? It's because you're likely very conscientious and probably pretty agreeable. So you have a little bit of the sucker triad. And you have these guys who are seeking to exploit you, just like other people in your life have most likely sought to exploit you. So that is, I would assume, a lot of what is going on with a recurring romantic dynamic that looks like that. We can get into how that applies to the other part of the question, but that, I mean, I would say the very short answer to that is that millennials are not any lazier than any other generation inherently, but they are running an opportunistic cost-benefit analysis on their environment that says, hey, I don't have to work as hard right now as I would have in previous generations. And so why go to all the trouble of making effort if it's not necessary? That's going to be a CB that runs across not only this species, but every species. It's just energy conservation. So my dog runs the same cost-benefit analysis. If it doesn't have to hustle for its food, it's going to be as lazy as possible as it can get away with if it's still being, consistently provisioned by me. So I think the same basic dynamics are at work with both of these scenarios, and you're just looking at human animals who are taking advantage of the situation at hand with energy conservation running the show.
Fabulous, perfect from my perspective. Because I'm me, and I've got this sort of, you can't help but have a cynical... You just can't help it. I mean, my view actually isn't cynical. It's just sort of a systematic, precision seeking with any question like this. What's also underneath this that I don't know that this occurred to Jen or whether or not she's being kind. Also remember that it's likely that the male that's making those kinds of noises is sufficiently sexually attractive that you're biting on it. So
yeah,
that's part of this equation. And so,
I mean, that's implied by wastrel. I should have said, washed up rock star wastrel.
I understand. Yeah, actually, I heard the word and I knew that that's what you were implying. So
these guys are always, they always have a little music on the side too. Every time I talk to a client who's in this situation, the guy does, open mic night down at the bar once a month. So yeah, they're aging Jimmies who are running out of other options.
Yeah. And so they're going to combine their low middle income job to your high middle income job. And it's like, hey, well, when it all adds up, it adds up pretty well.
Oh, that's actually really good. That reminds me of another quality of Jimmy's, which is they have spent their lives sort of monetizing potential. Like they're sort of, they're going through life just selling people on how all the greatness that can come about if you partner up with me, you know, if my ship comes in, everything's just going to be great. I'm going to make it big. Everything's going to be fantastic. And so, yeah, our incomes combined is probably not, he's probably not talking about the actual income that he's bringing to the relationship, but this amorphous idea of how you're going to make him better by your wonderful feminine energy that's going to inspire him to do great things in the world. And that this is unlikely to happen.
You can tell by looking at him that he's got big things. You know, he's got the potential.
So much potential.
Yeah. So this doesn't necessarily refer to this questioner, but it refers to that genre of questions that, and so I would stand by my assessment that if the male's making those kinds of noises, he's not sleeping up. It's unlikely. Okay. He's looking to, i.e. cut a corner, and he's willing to do it. So, males that are, is this 100% of the time? No, believe it or not. Our favorite friend, Jen, Larry. Mm-hmm. Larry told his lovely wife, he says, okay, it's okay with me. Now, listen, Cheryl, we've been together 10 years now, so you know me. You know I'm in this with you. So it's okay if you admit to me now that you're an heiress, because I just soon live the high. So.
Oh, well, Larry's a very special personality.
I think that dynamic is sitting in this mix, the wastrel dynamic.
And if you find yourself consistently, you know, being drawn to wastrels and going out on dates with wastrels, it's likely because you kind of are, you either don't understand or you don't want to accept the essential dynamics at the heart of the romantic interaction, and particularly what should be driving your online strategy, which is to not go, you don't want to be swiping yes on the guys who are immediately getting you excited, because that's going to continue to lead you down this path. So you want to provide opportunities for quality men to win you over with repeat exposure. And that's going to include guys that you're not necessarily, that, you know, they don't have the shaggy hair in the profile photo. They're not posing with their guitar on the wall. They don't have some sample of poetry that they've written that they want to share with you. They're not wooing you with, you know, French art, like all of these things. They're all very exciting, but they're all telltale signs that you're dealing with a washed up Jimmy, which nothing worse than a washed up Jimmy.
They're nothing finer than listening to Jen riff on this one. It's beautiful.
I know what I speak. Let's just say.
Jen, you don't have any issues about this at all.
I spent years in the online dating world, particularly in Boston and Seattle, falling into this trap over and over and over again. So yeah, learn from my mistakes.
Do what I say, not what I do.
Exactly. That's what I'm here for.
That's it. Oh, my grand. All right, Nathan, what do we got? What else?
All right. Okay, so our next question. Dear doctors, I'm concerned when I hear people and even other doctors say things like masks and social distancing and virtual learning is the permanent new normal. Even Dr. McDougall has voiced some of this recently on a web chat. Why is this the trend, and is it going to be like this? Life isn't fun at all, and I'm finding this very depressing. Months ago, I shared Dr. Ioannidis and similar opinions on Facebook and got shut down pretty hard. I apparently had the audacity to question the mask wearing, the social distancing concepts, and got ugly, angry responses. It feels dystopian to me. Not a single person I know seemed to voice any of this. Am I the nut?
Well, what do you want, Jen? We can flip for it.
This is more your COVID wheelhouse, so I'll let you get started, and I'll pitch in as needed.
It's safer for the podcast if you Yeah.
Well, this is it's an interesting thing because I have actually slipped, you know, over time I've gotten more into I refuse to use the phrase new normal just because mm-hmm. I feel allergic to it, but mm-hmm. I have become convinced that this is something that we are going to be dealing with at some level for a while, as opposed to my earlier optimism on it. So mm-hmm. my position has shifted a little bit, and I think yours has as well to some degree. So mm-hmm. it's interesting getting this question now. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, so there's different perspectives here. One of them is where are we at sociologically, and
right.
you know, where does COVID stand as a health concern? And then Where does social distancing and mask wearing stand in terms of its actual utility? So there's a variety of perspectives. So COVID has been a worse problem than I would have thought. It's been more tenacious than I thought. I saw when I saw all of the COVID basically leave Europe in midsummer, I assumed that that was the nature of what we would be seeing. And so when we saw a resurgence taking place, that surprised me. So I thought that America was essentially ending its process in September, October, as it looked to be mimicking what was happening in Europe in terms of the numbers. Now we're seeing a big resurgence. So we see that the virus is not nearly through with the population, and it's now finding its ways in nooks and crannies that it wasn't before. I saw some highbrow analysis that indicated that they had believed that by September or so, 50 to 60 million people in America had had the virus. So probably it's now up to, you know, 75 million or so. But the point is that out of those 75 million, what we've wound up with is 250 million deaths. So that means that 250,000. That's right. So, so that means that we've got a ways to go. In other words, that this would continue, and this is looking like it would percolate all of its way to a 0.3, possibly a 0.4 lethal virus. Because it's novel, it's hitting everybody now. And it's getting through the system, and it's getting the vulnerable people. That is what's transpiring, and it's not stopping. So the social distancing and the mask wearing are clearly not being very effective. I'm sure they're having some effect, certainly, but it's you're seeing this thing continue to roll. And so what's going to stop it ultimately is going to be the vaccines of various kinds, and they're going to be effective, and we're going to. The future is going to be that this problem is going to be dampened down substantially here in the next few months. So what are my thoughts about it? Well, my thoughts about it are that certainly the concept that this is the new normal is completely bogus. And there may be many people that have a lot of agendas that are served personally by such a concept, but such a concept is ludicrous. That wouldn't be the case if the coronavirus was a shifty virus that you couldn't get a vaccine to work. So I had no idea whether or not a vaccine was going to be possible. So the fact that a vaccine has been figured out is just a testimony to extraordinary human ingenuity and knowledge at this point in history. So we've got it figured out. We don't know how safe it all is. It looks pretty good. There may be some collateral damage along the way, which is going to be grisly and disturbing for people. I won't be the first person lined up for a vaccine. I'll be like a penguin in Antarctica watching the other penguins jump in the water and see which ones get eaten by sea leopards. Like I want to see that happen, and then I'll think about it. And I also plan on free riding on everybody else getting the virus, getting the vaccine. So I'm planning my personal strategy for this, but I expect that this landscape of the world they'll be rolling this thing out probably in America, I don't know, first of the year. And this will have a profound effect on what it is that we're observing over a 90-day period or so. So you can forget the concept that this is the new normal. The only question is, how much longer do we have this, you know, haywire economy and social process go on? Could it be six more months? Yeah, it could be. Do I think so? No, I don't. I think that there will be sufficient evidence in the first 90 days of the vaccine's release that I think that people will the cachet and the political force and the hysteria behind this will be considerably impacted, and I think it's I don't think it's going to last that long. The now, what do I think about the mask wearing and social distancing? Well, I think it's, you know, it's certainly an individual personal decision about what kind of positions you personally want to put yourself in. And I think it's an interesting civil liberties question about whether or not it's constitutional to actually be penalizing people for not wearing masks in public. I think that that's an interesting question that probably ought to be tested by the Supreme Court. It doesn't make any sense to me personally. It makes sense to me personally that the government's not here to protect your health. The government's here to protect your freedom. And so this is, they're making the case that if you're a carrier, you could be infecting other people. But the truth is, that's not true. They are out in public. They are exposing themselves to risk. And so if you're out there as well, then we're all exposing ourselves to risk. So the concept that the mask wearing should be somehow mandatory and imposed by the government, to me, is pretty incredible. Now, the fact that there would be social pressure behind it, and that people would be sort of shaming each other, and that people would believe that this would be super useful, that I can understand. And that's a sociological process that I think is fair game. Okay. But it is, you are not the nut. There are, many, many people that look at this whole thing and are rolling their eyeballs and saying, no, the mask wearing is ludicrous. And and to make it a civil liberties issue is absurd. And therefore, you know, I disagree. Many learned people disagree. The idea of this being a new normal, I think, is absurd. I don't think that makes any sense at all. And I think that the current sort of emergency status and reemergence of the virus, particularly even now, I understand Sweden is going to go into some sort of lockdown. Now, that's interesting. I can see a certain logic to it, because there's a difference between locking down temporarily when you have a virus in your left hand ready to be used by your right hand. So that creates a completely different situation. So for myself, I am now being probably a little bit more careful with myself because I might expose my mother that lives with me. I'm being more careful now than I would have maybe 3 months ago. I was reasonably careful, but now I'm more careful. Why? Because it's like we're right at the end of the line here. We're almost done. And we actually, at the same time, we're seeing a resurgence in the virus, probably due to Thanksgiving get-togethers with families, etc. So the point is that we've got a few, you know, we got some part of the football field we still have to get through. And so for yourself personally, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, go in public, don't go in public, you know, make your own choices. I personally am pretty conservative and careful. I'm also not militant enough to be daring the city fathers and the police and anybody else under the sun by not wearing my mask where it ought to be worn according to convention or law. So I'm not doing that. So I'm going to go ahead and play along. Why? Because we're not playing along for 20 years the rest of my life. We're playing along for a little while longer. So suck it up. It's not that bad. We'll get through this fiasco and then it's going to be over. I sincerely also expect at some point for the virus too have washed its way through the population. I don't know when that would be and at what point it's basically done. We're never probably going to know, or we may not know very well, because the vaccine will in fact come in and interrupt that process. So if you're a vaccine maker, you want to get to this right now as fast as you can, because you want to take credit for it when it's gone in June. Whether or not
whether or not you were a large engine of that or not. But one way or the other, we will return back to normal, and the mask wearing and paranoia and all this sort of stuff will be, you know, a very interesting point, you know, and moment in world history. And so that's what it will be, but it will not institute a new normal, except in, you know, there's a few things that will change. So they've talked about how business travel may be curtailed. What are people doing traveling for business anyway, for God's sakes? There's nothing you can say, you know, in Tampa that you couldn't say from your house in Dallas. So that was just a waste of money and junket traveling and everything else under the sun most of the time. So certain practices will change, and that's fine. But they won't be out of terror for the coronavirus. They will be because the coronavirus forced new cost-benefit analyses to be done on certain lifestyle practices, and those things will now shift to some degree, but not behind any cowering new normal. It'll just be, you know, a modifications of human life as a result of this experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dr. Lyle, I think you're right. You're so right about the traveling for business. But someone in business told me that you have to see people in person. It makes a big difference. And of course, this is a good looking, tall, handsome dude. So of course, they were banking on the fact that someone gets to look at them and they can't think straight and talk straight. You know, I've heard many times of people who meet the salesperson and they're very attractive and then they can't say no to them, you know, or they're pretty disagreeable and they bully them into a deal or whatever. So in person, yeah, but
yeah. I have a friend that was a pharmaceutical rep, and she explained that most of the pharmaceutical reps are men, interestingly enough. And she said the reason why that is that the gatekeepers to the physicians are females. And so by having...
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that interesting, Jen?
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah. And so obviously those gatekeepers aren't going to be so effective if we're doing it by Zoom, okay? So there's definitely going to be practices that are going to be in person, and guys are going to want to go on the road. Why? Because you can't get laid over the internet, or at least not quite.
Well, in every business conference, every academic conference, I mean, those are just hookup fiestas. I mean, there's no other reason that these things exist. It's like everybody's staying in the same hotel. Everybody gets drunk at the sponsored reception. It's like the trajectory of this is really clear. There's a reason why everybody converges on Chicago at the same time. You know, it's not to share your great ideas that you've been working on all year. That's very easily done virtually. So. Yeah,
forget it.
Yeah, it's
the new normal is going to be tossed back really quick.
I anticipate a lot of, I mean, these fault lines that have been drawn politically over the last year are really just extraordinary. And you now have these, you know, really, really entrenched, like ideologically defined battle lines where people are not going to abandon those anytime soon. I think the getting past the presidential election softens it, but you still have some really confused incentives and people behaving essentially irrationally in one sense, but very rationally from the point of view of their interests and their institutional affiliations. And and I think you're going to see the same way that you have a spotlight effect on adverse consequences from COVID. You know, you sort of the freakish cases of the 30-year-old who had no pre-existing conditions who drops dead. Those are getting all the play and all the headlines. The same way that has been happening, and to great effect and to great advertising revenue for CNN and everybody else, I think you're going to see that played out all over again with the vaccine. So, of course, we're going to have all kinds of diverse effects from the vaccine. Every vaccine has them. You've got this weird cultural battle over vaccination anyway that's been happening for some years now, and I think it's on the precipice of this big, it's going to kind of merge into these predefined ideological fault lines, and I think it's going to be a shit show for a while around that.
Hey,
so
yeah Jen,
yeah,
I'm super curious about your thinking about this, because I zone out and I forget about the political issues, which of course are important in here, and they're important levers of the person's overall CB. All right, that's good. But what about the vaccine and resistance to vaccine? I think has a strong streak in the sort of government paranoid, libertarian, also bizarrely enough, hyper health arena, which is a different part of, you know, a very different group of people. But that's not sort of a very well defined people. You know, it's kind of like, strangely enough, I don't see like the left, which might otherwise be somewhat paranoid about government, you know, things and civil liberties. They probably are going to be preaching positive vaccine. Interestingly enough, the right, which would I think normally be, hey, we follow the rules and we do the rules and get your vaccine, et cetera. I don't think they tend to be anti-vaccine type of thing. I don't know that they will be, but I think you can have a diversified set of fringes that are going to be have their hackles up.
Right. Yeah, you've got this sort of new coalition that, and yeah. You'll see this happen in history. These sort of like political science will call them cross-cutting cleavages because political science has to make up all these ridiculous terms. But these sort of like, yeah. You know, you've got people who would normally, you would silo them into particular political parties and predefined interests, and then you have something come up that is a new social issue that draws people from across party lines and aligns them in essentially a new party or rallies around some sort of leader who's able to attract a much bigger independent streak from the other party. So there's really no predicting what could happen with that because, you've got a whole variety of weird coalitional members. You've got the, you know, super religious, you've got the hyper health arena, mm-hmm. You've got the, you know, live free or die kind of gun-toting, you know, libertarian
right.
types.
Right.
You've got people who do not share a lot of other common social issues at all, who may very well rally around this. So it really kind of just depends who, you know, this is like we've been talking about in other contexts. It's really a matter of what political figure or figures make the most hay with this and manage to build a movement around it in some kind of effective way. So you have people, I've been watching people trying to do this since the beginning of COVID, trying to kind of mobilize across different political fault lines with fear, you know, don't let the government chip you, you know, conspiracy theories seeping into the discussion, all of this kind of stuff. But I think in theory, if you had some sort of, plausible candidate, some sort of reasonable, non-wingnut, charismatic candidate who could make a case for the dangers of the vaccine, that could be a really interesting presence in the political field going into the next couple of years. So who knows? All sorts of things could happen, but certainly within, you know, the social media outrage machine, you're going to have more of what we've seen around COVID spotlighting, which mm-hmm. This is too dangerous. This is unacceptable. This is a different kind of vaccine. We don't understand this vaccine. It was rushed to market. We don't, you know, here are all the things that are suspicious about it. Here are all the cases of people who have terrible adverse effects that are going to affect them for a lifetime. Like, all sorts of shenanigans could come down with us. So stay tuned. But I think it comes back to what you're saying just about personal responsibility and your personal relationship to all of this. It's really like it's very easy for all of us to get caught up in, you know, why don't other people see this like I do? And why is everybody so crazy? And I feel like I'm just going insane with all the COVID contradictions. And really, your only business is, you know, how are you managing and mitigating your own risk? And how are you how are you existing in an equilibrium between your personal freedom, your personal enjoyment, and some level of social responsibility that makes sense for you. I was just talking recently somewhere else about this great piece in the New York Times this week about the uselessness of pandemic shaming in general, because, you know, somebody saying you're not being careful enough, this is a continuum of behavior. So I'm very responsible. I'm very careful. I'm very risk averse, but my behavior looks reckless if you go a little further further down the continuum to somebody mm-hmm. who's a lot more rigid than I am. And my behavior looks overly cautious to somebody to the other side of me. So, and everybody is in this position. You were somebody to everybody in the world. You were on either side of that divide. So the shaming does nothing to change someone else's behavior. It just causes you more stress and more outrage that you can then go, you know, filter out on social media and make advertising dollars for corporations. But it's also, this is just built into the fact that, again, we live in this lovely democratic regime where we, most of us get to do what we want. I think people are confused. This sort of fear of governmental tyranny, people are conflating corporate Costco policies with the government, you know, like, yeah, Costco is not going to let you come in without a mask, and they're going to kick you out if you don't have one on. But that is not the government, you know, punishing you for not wearing a mask. That's a very different proposition that will go to the court, and I believe the court would not tolerate that sort of infringement on civil liberties. There's a big difference between the president or the governor or anybody telling you, you know, asking you, pleading with you to wear a mask and engage in these policies versus punishing you for not doing so. That's a whole different political proposition, and we haven't crossed that bridge, and I don't think it's likely to unfold that way. So.
Oh, actually, I don't know this, Jen, but I think it has. So I think it is the law of California that you can't go into a commercial establishment without a mask.
And what happens has it been tested in the courts? Has somebody done it and been arrested?
I'm sure that that has not happened yet. But the point is I think
in many counties in Southern California have actually said we're not going to be enforcing.
We're not going to enforce it.
That's the difference. Like you can make the law; it's an unconstitutional law, but it's never going to go to review if nobody ever gets arrested.
Right. Got it.
This is basically a toothless sort of like we're going to make it look as serious as we possibly can, but there's no way we're actually sending you to jail over it.
Yeah.
The county health is threatening to shut down businesses, and because businesses are scared that they're going to come. I mean, you know, of course this is national news, but they had a couple of places where they actually came in and boarded up the place and wouldn't let the owners go into their own shop, you know.
Well, then that's something, I mean, that as sympathetic as I may be to that at some level, that is a constitutional issue and it will go through the courts. And I don't think, I mean, we've already seen the religious, the exception for practicing your religion. We've seen like the court is going to be siding pretty firmly on the side of free expression and civil liberties. So it's not going to stop governments, particularly blue state governments, from pushing it as far as they can. But I think when it actually comes down to a test, particularly a national legal test, it's not going to go anywhere. I could be wrong, but I don't see how.
No, I think you're right. No, I think this makes perfect sense to me that right now, because whoever's in charge can dictate terms right now and be pretty, you know, pretty aggressive, but as a, what a lot of libertarians and conservatives are concerned about is, quote, the future. I am not concerned about it. And being a libertarian, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking that this is a toothless issue. But right now you have this like emergency situation and a unusual swirl of political, you know, sensitivity about everything. I would agree. I mean, so I'm looking at this like, that's BS, and that won't stand after all the dust settles and this gets challenged up into the courts. I don't think that it stands. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting because the Supreme Court and the courts in general, that's the thing about the law, is that the law is a living process. And as human beings confront one problem after the next, of essentially the problems that they're confronting are problems of conflict of interest between individuals. That's what civilization is. Civilization is a set of agreed upon rules that help us mitigate the fact that group living has benefits that we want to have, but it imposes costs on us that we want to minimize. And so
So the United States and now other people that have followed us are attempting to have a government which is actually optimizing the life experiences of the people rather than the glory of the son of God dictator that you have, or king, or whatever the hell it is. So, but that doesn't mean that they've got it all worked out. They've got principles, they've got ideas, they've had to learn through harsh, bitter experiences and a lot of sort of course corrections. It's kind of like a person getting wise as they get older. When I was a very young guy, I believe it or not, when I was a teenager, I was selling real estate. Didn't last long, but I did. And
even though you could do it in person,
yeah. And what at the time, I believe my memory is correct about this. If it's not, it's very close. That the documents for a transaction were like a page long. And it might have been 2 pages at that point. But my dad might have showed me that 5 or 6 years earlier, it had been one page, and then it had gone over at around 1980 to about a page and a half. So it was a second page on the California Association of Realtors document for a sale or a listing. Then, I don't know, 20 years later, I'm buying a property or something. I can't remember what it was. And it's like 13 pages long. And my dad actually was explaining to me, he says, when you see these pages, Doug, what you're looking at is you're looking at one nasty puzzle legally after the next. So that as a state has gone to 20 million, 30 million, 40 million people and millions of real estate transactions, there's been trouble. And there's been the existing documents weren't in specific enough. And so now we've gone from a document that protected us against 90% of the trouble, and then things came up, then to 95, then to 96, then to 97, then to 98. And it's now the things are so long, nobody can read them. You just click the little button 27 times and says you read it and sign it. So you just got to trust it, okay? And you actually can, because there's been lawyers on both sides of that and case law that have bitterly fought their way to reason. To minimize your exposure beyond anything that you would consider a reasonable thing. So, but that, just as the common laws that led to, you know, commercial processes of the last couple of centuries were formulated in Dutch trading, you know, in the 14 and 1500s, that it took a long time for those to evolve. And the same thing is true of a problem like this. Like, well, what do you do if you have a pandemic and some people are really pissed off that if other people are walking around without a mask, they're causing me a possible exposure? Oops, new problem. Okay, so once again, we're going to watch the process go. I don't cower in libertarian fear and rage that the courts are going to be tipped upside down to do this terrible thing against human freedom. No, I look at it as detached interests. Like, okay, this is an interesting problem of conflict between individuals in a society. It's one that we haven't seen before, and we haven't had to litigate it. And so we'll find out. And the courts will, the people that will be involved, there will be layers of thought. And layers of judges, and ultimately someday we may have a Supreme Court decision on what the Supreme Court thinks of that particular conflict of interest between individuals. So right now, I know what I think the decision would be and should be, but I might, you know, enough Supreme Court justices may be persuaded by some other line of arguments that are consistent with the underlying principle of optimizing human well-being under the general welfare, that may be where that goes. Who knows? We'll just have to wait and find out.
Wonderful. Dr. Hawk, thank you for your analysis. Dr. Lyle, thank you for your analysis. I can't help but wonder if this new party, Dr. Hawk, that you suggested might happen for the people who don't want to do vaccines. I wonder if they're going to be called Antiva.
That's very good. Well, let's be clear. I'm not suggesting a new party.
I wonder if Trump starts this new party, will he be the leader of Antiva?
See, this is the kind of crap that can happen. I mean, this is the sort of weird shit that goes
the troll
down.
That he is. He might name it that. You don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, even in well consolidated democracies, weird things can happen when you have emergent social issues, and particularly when you have emergent social issues that coalesce in time and space around some bizarre charismatic figure. Like, you can get short term weird crap. It can happen. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that could be. I mean, people forget Ross Perot polled 20% of the popular vote in the 1992 presidential election. You know, this is like, if you remember what a crazy, on its face, just bizarre, like, who would want this guy to be president sort of proposition. He managed to, even being out of the race, his name was still on the ticket, but he had dropped out of the race by the time of election day. He still got 20% or nearly 20%. And that is just that's a testament to the sort of the whims of the electorate and the way that, sort of in an ephemeral moment, you cannot predict what sort of interests are going to be captured by a particular kind of character. I think most of these things wash out over time, like we've talked about in past weeks. You know, the system corrects for itself, but that doesn't mean that you don't have some sort of really bizarre short-term effect where you have this moment of great irrationality in the electorate and some very strange results that could happen. So,
stay tuned. All grand. All right.
Well, Dr. Hawk, thank you. Dr. Lyle, our next question just says that they miss Dr. Lyle's rants about the coronavirus, but I think you just gave us a really good
question. We fulfilled that.
But the question just had to, they wanted to give you a rant of their own to try and provoke you, basically. all right. Dr. Hawk, Dr. Lyle, thank you so much for your lovely analysis. We appreciate it.
Great. All right. Very good, Nathan. Thanks. Good hearing from you.
Excellent. Have a good night, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G., Dr. Lyle, and Dr. Hawk with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.